Now stay tuned for Straight Talk, the show where social justice meets criminal law. Brought to you on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Now here's your host, Andre Hakes.
Good morning, Charlottesville. You're listening to WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, 94.7. I'm Andre Hakes, and this is Straight Talk. Straight Talk is a series of conversations about law and social justice issues. And today on Straight Talk, we have two guests. We have Linda McNeil, who is the Charlottesville Youth Programs Coordinator for ROSMY, R-O-S-M-Y. I'll let her tell you what that stands for, because I think I usually get it kind of wrong. And Owen Barrett, who is a sort of a client of ROSMY. How you doing this morning?
Fine, thank you. Be here.
Tell me what ROSMY stands for.
So it stands for Richmond Organization for Sexual Minority Youth.
See, I always thought it was Richmond Out Sexual Minority
Youth.
Right,
and I kind of like that, actually, when I saw you say that, because Out Youth of the Blue Ridge
right.
was the initial LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, queer, etc., youth support group attempt here in the Charlottesville area. And at a certain point, Out Youth of the Blue Ridge people were introduced to the ROSMY people in Richmond, and that morphed into the ROSMY branch here in Charlottesville.
That's probably why
area.
I think that. I think that I was asked
cool.
to be on the board of Out Youth
right.
sometime years and years, and
right.
I was kind of a miserable failure at it. I'm not a very good meeting person. But.
Well, we don't spell out that acronym anymore anyway, because we've moved out beyond Richmond, obviously, and we've
right.
moved beyond sexual minority youth to include gender minority youth, which is, I think, more our focus this morning.
Which actually
correct.
Just begs the question. Tell
yeah.
me the difference between
okay.
gender and sexuality.
All right. So simply put, gender identity is how you feel about yourself inside, in terms of the male-female binary spectrum. Sexual orientation is who you are attracted to.
Okay.
So most people have a sense of their gender before, you know, well before sometimes who they might be excited about being around.
I see. I got it. It seems like those things get pretty conflated sometimes in the cultural consciousness.
Yeah, they do. And I think they intersect in our lives, too. You know, depending on how I identify in terms of my gender might have some influence as to who I might feel attracted to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's, you know, it's not an incorrect conflation, but it's definitely two separate things.
So you're the Charlottesville Outreach Coordinator for ROSMY.
And the Programs Coordinator.
And the
yeah.
Programs Coordinator.
Yep.
Okay. So tell me about your background to start with. How'd you get involved with ROSMY and what kind of education and experiences have you had that led you to be interested in that organization?
Well, I've worked with young people my whole life in the educational areas and also just in terms of volunteer work at Unitarian Universalist with Unitarian Universalist Church youth groups and the whole equity and diversity spectrum of ideas and causes and projects is near and dear to me personally and just in general. I just I feel like it's an area where we need as much support and education and advocacy as we can put together. And I actually had retired from public teaching in Greene County Public Schools in the summer of 2009, and about 2 years later, ROSMY Richmond was able to get a grant to fund the position here in Charlottesville, and I saw the ad online, and I put my resume and letter of intent in that afternoon.
What?
This
so,
is my dream job.
So you taught in Greene. What'd you teach?
Well, I'm a special ed teacher. I took a master's degree in education of the deaf and mm-hmm. hard of hearing, so I worked with the hearing impaired population, but I also went into all of the regular ed classrooms, pre-K through 12. And so, and in a way, I kind of covered the whole gambit of, you know.
Taught a bunch of different ages.
Ages, subject content, yeah.
Got it.
Good time.
Wow.
Good time.
And you're gay.
I identify as genderqueer.
Genderqueer.
Which would mean I am not a transgender person in the sense that I'm transitioning from mm-hmm. the gender I was assigned at birth to the opposite gender. But I'm not, I don't identify strictly as female, even though I was assigned female at birth, mm-hmm. and I don't identify strictly as male. I'm sort of somewhere in that fluid continuum.
So you're kind of neither male nor female.
I'm neither strictly male nor female, yeah.
Okay. It's got a little yin with your yang.
Exactly.
There.
And so that's my gender identity. And as far as me being gay, my sexual orientation really is a little broader based than that as well. And I would call myself pansexual now.
Pansexual.
Meaning that I could be attracted to anyone of any gender, whether they're cis, whether they're gender identifying with the one they were assigned at birth, which is cisgender, or whether they are more gender fluid, gender variant, transgender, whatever.
Let's talk about that alphabet soup for a minute.
Yeah.
We covered briefly that gender and sexuality are not the same thing. Let's start with sexuality, because I think that's the one that most people are familiar with. We've mm-hmm. known about gay people for a long time. We got straight people, we got gay people, we got bi people.
Right.
We got a lot more than that going on. And there's some words floating around out there that I bet some people don't know what they mean.
It's true. And I would say, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about
honestly,
it.
Honestly, it's a moving target. There are new terms coming up all the time. And I think it's important for the people who are learning about themselves, who are trying to figure out who they are and what is a term that I could use. If somebody needs to put a label on me, can I relate to that label and make me feel more as though I have an identity that I can speak about
right.
and define. But beyond that, for all of us to figure out what scolio-romantic means and what lithosexual means and, you know, the next term that's going to come around the corner next month, it's just overwhelming, and it's really not that necessary. The main thing is that there are people who are not attracted specifically or just exclusively to members of the opposite gender. And that is a wide berth of people. And so we have people who identify as lesbian or gay. They're attracted to people of their own gender.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who identify as bi who say they're attracted to either gender. And then when you go beyond that, like pan or on and on, they may be attracted to any kinds of mixtures of people. And then we have people who are asexual.
How can you go beyond that? I mean, so I'm 44, right? And I grew up thinking, okay, I'm a lesbian.
Right.
Right? These are the options, right?
Yeah,
you can be straight or you can be gay.
Right.
That's it. Those are the options.
Right.
Right. And I remember, you know, as a young person reading about this and reading like Kinsey, right? And this
sure.
sort of idea that there was a spectrum
the one to
of
six.
Sexuality,
yeah.
right? You had straight people, you had gay people, and then you had some people who were kind of in the middle somewhere. Maybe everybody was really sort of in the middle, and
yeah.
there weren't very many people who were truly on one end or the other.
I think that's true.
And, you know, but I sort of got this idea that, you know, there were poles, and you could be at the poles or in the middle, but it was two-dimensional. And what you're talking to me about, and you talk about going beyond that, I'm kind of like, what is it? What does that mean?
Well, if you talk about the people in the middle of that polarity, mm-hmm. that gay or straight polarity, you do have people who are in the middle. And in the past, we've just talked about them being bi, which would be right in the middle. You know, if you're going from one to six, like Kinsey did, if you're not a one and you're not a six, then you might be a three. But
right.
in fact, there are, you know, 1.2s and 2.5s and 5.5s and, you know,
sure.
all of those little points along that continuum, that straight linear line are there. And we're now coming up with terms for all of that. But even that is too restrictive for some people, that linear continuum. It's just, it's more than that. It's bigger than that.
Is it maybe the idea that your attraction to someone may not be determined by that person's gender?
Oh, for sure.
Because that whole Kinsey scale is basically based on the idea, I mean, the assumption underlying it is that
right.
gender governs
it's
attraction.
It's the driving force
right.
behind attraction. And that I think that is true for many, many, many people, but not everyone. And there, for some of us, gender is not the only point of of, you know, the only thing that drives our attraction.
Right. There's, and it's certainly, I don't think that. I think there's a lot of straight cisgender people who gender is not the only thing that drives their attraction. Maybe you like somebody because they have a lovely voice, or
exactly.
maybe you like somebody because, I don't know, you like the way they dress.
Exactly.
Or, right. And so,
yeah.
you know, that's true of everybody, kind of. It's just that we have never really categorized it in that way.
Right.
And it has tended to fall along lines of gender.
It has.
Okay, so now we've got, we've sort of abandoned the two-dimensional spectrum of
right.
sexuality and said, okay, well, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's not just that you're a 1.2 or a, you know, on the Richter scale, but, you know, you're outside that entirely. Maybe you're in A7D4. Who knows?
Right.
Right. You know, there's a whole other dimension happening.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's really blow everybody's mind. Let's talk about gender now, right?
In that same way.
Let's
yeah.
talk about gender. How does that work? I mean, most people think you're born, you got a birth certificate, it says you're male or female. You either got a penis or you don't.
Exactly.
You know.
And that's how it's determined. You're assigned a gender at birth, generally speaking. There isn't ambiguity about your genitals. But we don't dig into what our hormone profile is. We don't necessarily look at our chromosome profile. And if those things were taken into account medically when we were born or when even during conception and gestation, that we might find that we're not as strictly binary as we think we are. We're not as strictly male or female. But at this point in our society, we are born, we are assigned a gender at birth, and we are given messages even before we're born about what that's supposed to look like, what that gender identity is supposed to look like, how we're supposed to express that, the ways we're supposed to think, walk, talk, eat, dance, date,
right.
professions, etc. But the truth of the matter is, it's not that clear, as just like the sexual orientation. It's not a binary system. It's a much more fluid system than that. And there are many, many people who identify as non-binary, gender expansive, gender non-conforming, gender fluid, unique, variant. You know, there are lots of terms that sort of bust that binary system now. And these are not necessarily people who feel, okay, I was assigned female at birth, but I really know that I want to live life as a man because I am a man.
Okay.
There are people, many people who, or the other way around. I was mm-hmm. assigned male at birth, and I want very much to live who I really am, which is as a female.
Right.
Those people I would refer to as transgender. But there's a large number of people who stand under that big transgender umbrella mm-hmm. who identify as non-binary or gender expansive. Those are the people in between on that line again, maybe the 1.6 or the 5.2 or whatever.
All right, back to my 44-year-old Kinsey era lesbian understanding. You know, when I think about being between genders, what comes to mind is hermaphrodites, or maybe
right.
the there was some Indian tribe that had people who.
Right.
What was the name of that? Dash? Something like that?
Two Spirit?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, that was the.
Two Spirit. Let's talk about that for a second, and then talk a little bit about how you're going beyond that.
So, again, hermaphrodite, or the term we use now, is. Oh, gosh.
Intersex, maybe?
Yes. Thank you. That's the sort of in the middle piece of that criterion.
Somebody who physically has
yeah,
mixed genitalia.
Exactly.
Considered a birth defect.
But again, just like bisexual is in the middle of the gay or straight continuum, not everybody is strictly halfway, and it's more expansive than that. And people, I'm sorry, I lost track of your question.
Well, I was asking you about sort of what, you know, what those things are. I'm just thinking, you know, in most of us, I think most of us old people anyway, think about gender in terms of parts. You got this part or that part,
right,
and there
are
a few people who have kind of mixed parts. And,
sure, sure, sure.
You know, we're not really sure about that. But I think you're going beyond the physical parts. You're talking about chromosomal makeup and things like that. Explain a little bit more about that.
Well, I am, but I'm also talking about just how people feel inside. So let me try to give an example here, especially for someone your age. You identify as lesbian, you
said. I do.
And yet your demeanor is of a masculine side, you know.
I'm butch.
You're butch, exactly. In the old terminology, I mean, that's how I identified for years, as a butch lesbian.
Sure.
That's how I felt comfortable. That was the language and the explanation that suited where I was at the time and how I could even understand it myself, because I didn't have as much understanding or language or inner knowledge, perhaps, as I may now. And so I identified as a butch lesbian, a person attracted to other women who was given the assigned female at birth and who felt sort of masculine on that side of it. And that works. Mm-hmm. And that is the real feeling that some people have, like, mm-hmm. you feel comfortable being a butch lesbian, if I may use that term, since you have.
That is true, although I've often thought, as we talk about, you know, this transgender thing, as right. I'm learning about it over time, I've often thought, you know, this was not an option when I was a child, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I remember being a little kid, and sure. I was, like, not real happy to be a girl.
Well, none of this was an option when I was a child, because
no,
I'm, like, 20-plus years older than you. But I would say is that it's not just a question of option. It's also a question of digging deep enough to realize, wow, it's not just that. I'm not a butch lesbian. I'm gender fluid. And I happen to, and I very clearly, it's not just that I want to wear cowboy boots and snap shirts.
Now, why would you mention that, Linda?
Because you look fabulous in it. And your hat, your hat that everyone knows, and you look great, and that may be how you feel and how comfortable you are with it is something that only you would know, but it's beyond that. It's beyond just what I wear, you know, whether I use makeup or not, whether I feel viscerally uncomfortable in feminine clothing.
Right.
It's more than just, you know, this is sort of the end of the criteria. This is the side that I lean towards.
Right.
Even as a young child, I knew I wasn't a girl.
Well, you'd be surprised to know there are not a lot of pantyhose in my drawers.
No, I wouldn't be surprised.
So, you know, no. I feel that way too. Right. I would not be happy in a dress.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't feel like I'm not female. I feel like
correct.
I'm definitely a chick.
Great.
I'm just a butch chick.
I'm glad for you. And I'm definitely not. And that's just the way of it, you know. But it's not something that I may have understood or been, even when I understood it or suspected mm-hmm. it, I didn't articulate it. I didn't know how to. And even if I had known how to, I wouldn't have probably done it, because when I was 44 or coming up through,
sure.
you know, about your age, it was way enough to say to people, I'm not straight.
Right.
You know, that was big enough. If I could get the word lesbian out without choking and having everybody go, oh, my goodness.
Horrors.
That's horrible. We have to fire her now.
Oh,
or, you
God.
Know, take her child, stepdaughter right. from her or whatever. That's what I was living with. So it's not something that, you know, that came easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about it or articulating it didn't come easily either. But, you know, I would say within the last 20 years, I'm 68, so I was, you know, sort of nearing, you know, 50. I started to understand a little better, and I started to have language to explore it and to express it. And I still didn't even express it hardly to anybody except my family.
But these ideas of the idea of transgender, the idea that there could be another dimension to gender, I think weren't floating around out there at the time that you were a child or when I was a child, or at least not as accessible.
Well,
to
I mean,
most
they
of us.
Weren't in the way they are now. You know, certainly we had Christine Jorgensen and Renee Richards and people like that who were celebrity level folks, or at least became that way when they came out as transgender.
I don't have any idea who those people are. Is
I
that
know,
sad
that's
or
because
what?
You're 44.
Okay.
No.
So who are those people?
Before your time. Well, Christine Jorgensen really was one of the first public figure or public level attention getter to transition from male to female. And went to, was it Sweden, to have Yeah, to have her surgery done. When did this gender confirmation surgery happen? In the 50s.
In the 50s?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
And I can say ma'am because you've already identified yourself as female.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't gender my language that way.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, though, I keep thinking, you know, if this had felt like more of an option when I was a child, I might have thought, well, I'm trans. I clearly want to be a guy.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
but
I agree.
Things turned out okay, but
it might
have been different.
Sure. And I think now, you know, we talked a little bit about, before the show, about the so-called trans trend. It seems like a lot of young people are coming out as trans now.
Why is that?
Is that because of the Caitlyn Jenners and the whatnots? But,
well, that was my theory, but you weren't sure about that.
Well, I just feel like there have been, you know, champions of the transgender, male-to-female, female-to-male, confirmation, surgery, all of that over time, since, you know, the 50s and probably before we didn't know about it. But I think it's just what you were referring to just now, that now there is the language, there is the mental constructs and social constructs even for us to begin to explore that more deeply. And it allows people the opportunity to do that if they want to. And if it's just not something they want to look at all, that's all right. But for those of us who do want to look at and have come to certain conclusions about it, even if they're not written in stone, mm-hmm. this gives us a better chance to be able to feel that, express it, articulate it, educate about it, and be actually accepted and maybe someday celebrated.
Well, so. Mayhaps. Yeah. I think this is probably one of those moments where I'm supposed to say something like, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Straight Talk. I'm Andre Hakes. In the studio today, I have Linda McNeil, who's the Charlottesville Youth Programs Coordinator for RESME. And I have Owen Barrett. Linda, I'm going to talk to you just a little bit more before I switch over to Owen.
All right.
We're not quite at the halfway point just yet. Tell me a little bit more. Tell me a little bit about young people dealing with this issue. I mean, RESME serves youth. Yes.
Yes.
And as a 44-year-old butch lesbian, sometimes I think to myself, God, you know, if I had been offered that opportunity as a child, I might have taken it, and I might not be happy with it now. Isn't that the challenge, I think, of dealing with somebody who's very young? Talk about how we deal with that.
You might not be happy with what?
Well, I might not have been happy if I had decided to have surgery and decided to become a man, right? Okay. If it had been an option, sure, I might have thought, this is what I want to do.
Right.
And then now I might regret it. I don't know.
Maybe I
wouldn't, but it's...
Well, it's transitioning from your assigned gender at birth to the opposite gender is not an overnight situation. And the people who offer the services, who provide the services to make that transition, aren't going to, you know, allow a fast track effort towards that. It takes a long time. There's a lot of counseling involved. There's a lot of soul searching involved. The families are brought in, more and more now, children who are starting to identify as early as 3 or at least speak about it when they didn't before.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all kind of get a sense of our gender around that time, but now they're starting to speak about it and be insistent and consistent and persistent about, I'm not a girl. I'm not a boy. And starting as they approach puberty on what we call hormone blockers,
mm-hmm.
that, I think, is the healthier approach because I'm not a medical professional, so I don't know as much as I might want to. But if you do that, at least it gives you time through puberty when everything is just so nuts anyway. For everybody,
mm-hmm.
To decide, you know, how real is this for me? How serious am I about this? And then by the time you get towards, you know, maybe 16, 17, 18, you might start thinking in terms of taking hormone replacement
or
entertaining surgery.
What hormone blockers are.
Okay,
let's talk about that as an option to begin with.
So hormone blockers basically put a stall on puberty.
Okay.
All right. But the beauty about hormone blockers is that it's reversible.
Okay.
So if a person who's approaching puberty begins hormone blockers, such a tongue twister, and stalls puberty, so if they're assigned female at birth, they don't get menses, they don't, you know, that doesn't happen. If they're assigned male at puberty, they don't start to, you know, necessarily do the voice drop and the facial hair and the enlarging testicles and penis and all that kind of stuff. Puberty, right? We all kind of should know what puberty is. So it puts a stall on that and gives it an opportunity to decide. And then later on, if you begin hormone therapy or you are considering surgery to change your physical function and appearance, that doesn't happen until, you know, later on when you've had a chance to kind of, you know, gauge how serious and how real this is, to avoid exactly what you're
suggesting. To avoid that kind of mistake.
That, oh my gosh, I've made this mistake, and now even if I stop my hormone shots or patch or whatever, it's still going to have had its effect on my body to the point that it has, and I'm always going to have, you know, whatever the result was.
I got you. So it allows somebody to sort of age mentally and emotionally without going through the physical changes of puberty, so that then later on, if they decide that they actually want to stay whatever gender they were born, or if they decide that they want to change genders, they can do that without having whatever adverse effects, without having to make that decision so early.
Exactly. And I think it's more they're going to realize that they either truly are the gender they were assigned at birth, or that they aren't the gender they assigned at birth, and they need to confirm who they truly are.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a second with Owen Barrett.
You're listening to Straight Talk on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. If you'd like to participate in the program, it's 434-284-9470. And now back to your host, Andre Hakes.
And we are back on the air with Straight Talk. This is Andre Hakes. You are listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And in the interim, we have switched up interviewees on you. And I'm now about to talk to Owen Barrett. How you doing, Owen?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I sort of want to describe you, sort of the listeners, so they know kind of who I'm talking to. I'm talking to a young man in a black skull cap with kind of pinkish hair, sort of kind of peeking out the side, and the beginnings of a beard and some piercings. We got a nose ring and a couple lip studs, and what do you call these? Gauge?
Yeah,
the big
gauges.
Ones? Black sweatshirt. Blue jeans, black shoes. I'm thinking young man. Young man?
Yeah,
cool.
Young man.
So, Owen Barrett, tell me a little bit about your story. Tell me sort of how you got to this point in your life. And I'm betting you didn't start out as young man.
No, did not start out as young man. So I was born and assigned female at birth. And that was back in 96, so I'm about to be 19 here soon. And, you know, gender and sexuality, you know, you're young, you don't really know about any of that. It never really occurred to me, probably until puberty is when I started realizing that, you know, their gender was a thing. Like, why can't I hang out with boys? Oh, you're a girl, that's why, kind of thing. So later started realizing, you know, that doesn't seem right. I want to be able to hang out with boys, and why can't I do that? You know, that's silly. And, you know, it just started getting kind of weird like that, and, you know, every time somebody called me a girl, I'd kind of cringe, and, you know, that just doesn't feel right. That's kind of uncomfortable. Like, don't say that. and then, you know, it kept kind of progressing like that to the point where, you know, I kind of felt more gender fluid to start out with. You know, it was just kind of, for me, it was a slow transition. Like, I didn't want to just jump and be like, yes, I'm a guy, I'm a boy, that's who I am, I am transgender. Because, you know, it's scary. Coming out as anything other than, you know, straight and cisgendered is, you know, it can be scary for, you know, a lot of people. But I do have a very, very supportive family, and my friends are really supportive, so I shouldn't have been as scared as, you know, I was, but it's terrifying. So, you know, it kept kind of progressing that way. And then it was just, you know, one day I was at Rosmi, actually, and, you know, we do our introducing ourselves kind of thing, you know, age, name, gender, pronoun preference, you know, all that kind of stuff. And one day at Rosmi, I was just like, you know what, let's do male pronouns. Let's try that today. And, you know, people started using he, and I'd already been going by the name Owen. I think I'd already kind of switched over. It was either that or my previous name, you know, either or. But, you know, Owen felt a lot better. It just kind of rolls off the tongue, I think.
Although it's a very unusual spelling of Owen.
Yes, it's E-O-G-H-A-N. It is Celtic. I do come from some Irish and Scottish kind of families, so.
Gotcha.
It fit with the last name Barrett. Barrett's Irish, so I really liked that. It felt right to me choosing that name. I spent a lot of time choosing names. Like, there's got to be something out there, and then I saw that one. I was like, I love it. It cannot be a normal spelling. Like, that's not going to happen. I'm too not normal.
Right.
Yeah, so.
So, back up for a second.
Yeah.
When you first started to feel like you might be different in some way, not straight and cisgendered, how old were you?
Well, I knew the not straight part of that. I guess maybe 14 or 15. I came out as bisexual.
Okay.
I knew something wasn't normal, if you will.
What is that? Is that 14, 15, is it like 9th grade, 10th grade?
I have no idea. I was homeschooled.
Okay. All right. Got
That's
it.
Right, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking.
Something like that, though.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, so I started thinking. I was like, you know, something doesn't feel right. You know, I'm probably bisexual. I think that's what that is, you know? And at the time, I feel like I was. And, you know, gender and sexuality, you know, it can switch over time. Like, some people might feel more masculine one day, some people might feel more feminine that day, and some people might go through a lot of sexuality changes, just like, I'm gay today, or, you know, in a few months or years or something, it just might switch again. Like, I'm not bisexual, I'm gay now.
Right.
So, it's just, it also is, you know, the looking for what's right. It's hard to find who you are sometimes. I think Linda maybe may have said something like that, the soul-searching kind of thing. You know, so I guess me coming out as bisexual was me trying to say, you know, something's not completely right here.
Right. Well, maybe at that time, did you have the idea, because the culture was ready to sort of say, well, sexuality can be more fluid, but we weren't maybe as ready to say gender can be more fluid. And so it makes sense that might be the first thing that, you know, you'd be able to put some words to.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think when I first, I don't remember when I first heard the word transgender. I really honestly don't remember that. But I know that maybe a year, give or take, before I came out as transgender, I had a friend come out as transgender as well,
mm-hmm.
also female to male. And, you know, I started realizing, you know, that can happen. That's
right.
A possibility for me. Like, I'm not stuck here. I'm not stuck how I am.
Right.
Female, just female. No, I don't have to be that way. I can be who I actually am. And so, you know, that, I guess that encouraged me a little bit to look deeper into it. And so I guess I was around 16, I believe, is when I really came out as transgender.
And how did you do that? Who's the first person you came out to other than yourself?
I can't remember if maybe I told a friend before my family, but I think my family was probably the first.
Yeah?
And, you know, some of the youth at Rosmi, I mean, they knew. They were there when I was like, yeah, let's use male pronouns today, and how does that work?
Now, you started out at Rosmi
mm-hmm.
because you thought maybe you were bi.
Mm-hmm.
Had you been going to Rosmi before, or you started going to Rosmi when you thought maybe you were bi?
Yeah, I think I started going when I thought that I was bisexual. But then that wasn't even the problem anymore.
Right.
That just kind of got swept under the rug. That was not my problem. That wasn't, I guess, the reason that I was actually really there. I think subconsciously I knew that, but it was like, I'm bisexual. We're going to go with that for now.
Right. How'd you get hooked up with Rosmi?
Oh, man. I think my mom probably went around looking for stuff, because, you know, it came out as bi, and so she's like, oh, I gotta do a bunch of research and get you to a place. And also my friend had been going there as well since he had come out, and So I wasn't, like, entirely alone, just, like, creeping in, like, oh, God, this is terrifying, new people. So
right.
I knew somebody, and it was great, and Linda was freaking awesome. She was wearing a rainbow belt when I came in. I was like, oh, this is fantastic.
That's cool. It sounds like your family's been really supportive.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's not the case for some people.
It's not.
do you have any friends for whom that's not been the case?
You know, I have a few friends where they might not be in, like, life-threatening situations, but they're definitely in different situations than I am. Maybe a little bit less support. You know, parents might be separated, so there's more stress and pressure going on attached to, you know, coming out as trans and going through that process of transitioning. But I mean, there's, who was it, Sage, I can't remember her last name, but she went missing as a transgender girl.
Yes.
So there's definitely people out there who, you know, I don't know if her family supported her or not, I can't remember, but...
Well, they certainly seem to be involved in trying to find her now.
Definitely. But, you know, there's...
I wish we knew what happened to her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I believe she used to go to Rosme, yeah. It was before I went, but...
Did you know her?
I did not. I think she had stopped going to Rosme, like, right before I went or something like
that.
What's
the age breakout at Rosme?
It's ages 14 to 20, so once you turn 21, you're out.
Okay. And how old are you?
I'm 18. I'm going to be 19 on Thanksgiving this year, actually.
Gotcha. So you said, how old were the youngest?
14.
14. 14 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
And how? So this is you remember the Charlottesville chapter?
Yeah.
How many people does the Charlottesville chapter serve?
A grand total, I have no idea. But you know, it was pretty steady for a while, like around 10 people or so. Whenever mm-hmm. I'd go, some days it was just wacky and be me and one other person, mm-hmm. or there would just be like almost 20 people, and it was just like this massive people. And it was like, oh my God, this used to be so small. I haven't been to Rosme in the last couple months, though. I've been taking classes at Piedmont, so it conflicts with Rosme, which is kind of sucky. But
right, got it. Well, when you go to Rosme, I mean, tell me what you guys do. I mean, what is involved? It's an evening meeting, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a weekly thing? Or
yeah, it's weekly. It's on Mondays. It's 6:30 to 8:30.
And if somebody wanted to get hooked up with Rosme, how would they do it?
There's a website, it's Rosme, is it .org? .org, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also a Facebook page for mm-hmm. Rosme.
Well, they could probably call Linda McNeil, too.
Yep.
They'd probably find her number out there. Or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do? You go, what happens?
Oh, you go in, you sign in, do whatever. If you're a new member, you get this crazy form that takes like a year to fill out. And, you know, everyone's sitting in a circle so we can all see each other and, you know, actually have free conversations and not be blocked by anybody mm-hmm. and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's really nice. And then there's the lovely facilitators, Linda and others are fantastic. And, you know, there's, we start out with reading rules, you know, like, basically, don't be stupid while you're here. You know, be polite, be respectful. You know, don't be violent. There's no need for that. Use your words. You know, use I statements, speak for yourself, kind of thing. And you know, after the rules, we go around introducing ourselves, and that's the, you know, your name, your age, and the pronouns that you prefer to go by. And then sometimes, you know, you can. I think sexual orientation is optional during that. But I think a lot of people are really proud of their sexual orientation, being able to say, yeah, I'm gay. So it just gets added in there anyway, which is great. And then, you know, it goes around, and sometimes there will be, like, a specific topic in mind that Linda or whoever has come up with. I guess maybe the Richmond branch also has something to do about that.
Like, what kind of topics?
let's see. So we've done, like, there's the gingerbread man.
The gingerbread man? What's the gingerbread man? Now I have to know. Oh, I see a gender unicorn Linda's holding up over there.
Same deal.
A piece of paper that has a purple unicorn on it. Tell me about the gingerbread man.
Yeah, that's a fun activity. It's not necessarily a topic, but it's a good activity. it's basically like it's a little picture of like a gingerbread man kind of thing, and there's like lines that go across, you know, and then there's like a spectrum with that. Like on one end, it's like, you know, completely attracted to men, or the other end, women, kind of like that. And then it goes by, you know, romantic attraction, sexual attraction, gender orientation, sexual orientation, and, you know, all this fun stuff. And there's, yeah, there's romantic attraction as opposed to, like, sexual attraction, which there's a
complete difference
there. Oh, yeah. So romantic attraction is, you know, it's romantic. It's the attraction to that person, like, if you were in a relationship with them.
Whose eyes do you want to gaze deeply into
yes.
across the candlelit table? Right.
Long walks on the beach kind of thing.
I see. I got it.
And so that's who they are, you know, in their mind, in their heart kind of thing. You know, I'm male, but I have a female body. So, mm-hmm. you know, someone being romantically attracted to me would be them being romantically attracted to the man that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sexual attraction is the body.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you sexually attracted to? Who do you find fun to be around and, you know, hanky-panky.
Hanky-panky, I like that.
I don't know how else to say that without being weird.
or really making the FCC mad.
Yes, exactly. So, hanky-panky. but yeah, that's the sexual attraction. That's, you know, and some people think that, you know, romantic and sexual attraction are the same thing, and they're definitely not. I mean, they can be. They very well can be for certain people.
I think it's probably, you know, convenient if they are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, cisgendered person dating cisgendered person who are both straight, you know? Like, so
one stop shopping.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a little bit more confusing to handle, though. You know? So that's the gingerbread man is, it goes with, you know, it's got a bunch of different lines through him, you know, explaining, like, you know, who you think you are up here, like what gender you are in your head, you know, and then I guess it goes through, you know, what, you know, who you're romantically attracted to and who you're sexually attracted to and how you express yourself outside gender-wise, like how you dress kind of thing, your mannerisms, you know, how do you perceive yourself as or how do people perceive you as kind of thing. And, you know, that's really fun to do. And, you know, you draw lines through all that and you hit all these crazy points on these lines. And it just makes this, like, cluster of lines. And there's so many people doing it. And so there's, like, really, like, rainbow lines across this gingerbread.
You get a sense that there's a more than a linear spectrum,
yes.
I imagine, at the end
yes.
of that the end of that exercise.
Definitely. Because for me, whenever I have to do one of those, it goes from, you know, gender you were assigned at birth, like your physical sex. So I go from female and then your gender identity all the way to male. So completely across the whole scale,
mm-hmm.
this diagonal line. And then it just, you know, I'm gay. So it kind of squiggles around a little bit, you know.
All right, now wait a minute. You're gay.
Oh, yes.
All right,
gay.
So now what does that mean if you're a transgender person?
All right.
Okay. Help
That's
me
what
out.
Gets
help,
everybody.
Help my old butt
yeah.
out here.
That is definitely a question I get a lot. Most people just think, oh, well, that means you're straight because you have, you know, female body parts and you're attracted to guys. No.
Okay.
I am romantically and physically attracted to cisgendered men.
Okay.
So romantically, it's a lot easier to explain. I'm a man in my head, you know, I don't have the body, but inside I'm a guy. And I'm attracted to guys romantically.
Okay.
So that's where it's easier for people to understand, okay, I guess you're gay then, yeah. But then they get really stuck up on the genital thing. And
right, sure.
Yeah.
But when you say you're gay, what you mean is your identity, who you identify as. I mean, most people might think, you know, who you would be transitioning to.
Mm-hmm.
And that, therefore, if you're identifying as male and you like men, then you must be gay, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of the way you think of it, as opposed to you were born female and you like men, so you're straight. No.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works.
Exactly, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, and I get that question a lot, too.
So sexuality becomes defined by who you feel that you are
yeah.
in your mind
yeah.
or in your heart.
And, you know, the thing that I always tell people is, you know, you really shouldn't have any concern with my genitals. That's none of your business. Unless you're dating me or you're my doctor, you don't need to know.
True that.
So, you know, I get, most of the time now I seem to present as male and, you know, no one gets stumbled up on that anymore. Like, are you male or female kind of questions, you know? Usually it's just assumed male. So I don't have to deal with, well, I got to explain that now.
Well, you're definitely looking like a dude.
Awesome.
So I think this is another one of those moments where I'm supposed to say, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. And you are listening to Straight Talk with Andre Hakes. I'm in the studio. We have been talking with Linda McNeil a little earlier, the Rosemee Charlottesville Youth Programs Coordinator. And right now I'm talking with a young man, Owen Barrett, who's sort of been on this wild ride. So, Owen, let me ask you this. If you could tell yourself something back when this first occurred to you, if you could send a message back to yourself and tell yourself something about how things were going to turn out or about what to do, what would you say?
That's a really hard question. I think I'd probably tell myself that I shouldn't be afraid of needles.
That you shouldn't be afraid of needles.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
So
you have to get a lot of shots.
Yeah, I'm on testosterone and I take injections. I do them myself. And I've been on them for about a year and 9 months, I think, give or take. And so they're injections. And they used to go in the sides of my legs, which is an inch-long needle, and that's not super pleasant
to think about. It doesn't sound like a lot of fun.
No. I was never a big fan of needles, but I would definitely tell myself back then, get over it right now, because you're going to have to deal with this forever. But I've since switched to shorter needles. They're about half an inch, and then I inject them in the fat in my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot easier, actually. And, you know, the injections, honestly, they didn't hurt as much as I thought they would. But it's better going into the fat as opposed to the muscle in my leg.
Mm-hmm.
If you move your leg at all while the injection, you know, while the needle is in there, it's going to hurt really, really, really bad.
Right. Because
you're going through that muscle, and then you start to use that muscle.
Right, right.
Yeah. So I needed to tell myself to get over needles immediately kind of thing. Because it's going to happen, dude. It's going to happen. You're going to get stuck with needles.
Is that going to happen your whole life? Is that something that that you'll always have to do?
Yeah. If I continue with injections and continue with the transition, I may have to inject myself every week for the rest of my life. But there are other methods for using testosterone. I have a friend who's also female to male, transgender, and he's been using, like, a cream, which I didn't know existed, so I'm a little bit PO'd.
Well, can't you change now? Can't you, like, do that instead?
I probably could switch over, but I do know that the cream or whatever, the gel, I think it's gel, actually, that he's using, it does take effect slower, so it's going to be a slower process.
Talking about a gel or a cream, I'm imagining something like deodorant. You know, is that kind of what we're talking about? Or?
I think it's like a weird squeeze bottle thingy. I'm not really sure. Yeah, something like that. I know it just like rubs it into the skin somewhere. Like
almost like a lotion.
Yeah. So, you know, I think I could switch to that, I think. But I honestly am okay with doing the shots now. I don't give a crap about needles anymore.
Right, you're
definitely over that. But I, you know, it sounds really nice not having to stick yourself every week. So I'm glad that he's got that option. I think it's also like a insurance related thing as well. Like, not everyone can get on the gel or the cream or whatever. Depends on who you are and what you got going, but...
Well, when you mention insurance, I mean, this is an expensive process, yes, to make this transition. Not only it sounds like you've got hormones, whether you have them by an injection or by a cream or whatever delivery method, right?
Yeah.
But there are surgeries involved for some people, depending on how far you transition and things like that. How is insurance with all of that?
Insurance, it's... it does what it wants to. It's, you know, it can be a little bit more helpful, I think, in this country. It doesn't cover a lot Doesn't cover everything by all means. But I think there's a couple insurance companies, or maybe one, can't remember the name, and they're going to be trying to cover transgender-related surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
I think 80%, if not all, which would be fantastic, because they're not cheap. They're very much not cheap.
Right.
I will be having top surgery in January, actually, and I need a grand total of $7,000. That's a lot of money. But, you know, I'm getting there. I'm getting there slowly and steadily, but, you know, so insurance, it could definitely cover more. It's just, it depends on your insurance, it depends on your state, it depends on your situation, it depends on a lot of things.
How have your friends and just even casual people who have known you, not your closest, best, you know, dearest friend, but just people who have known you? I mean, you've lived in Charlottesville all your life?
Yeah, I mean...
Most of it?
Technically, I lived in Earliesville for 13 years, but yeah, Charlottesville.
In the area, right? So you've grown up with these people.
Yeah.
There are lots of people who probably knew you as a little girl,
mm-hmm.
And now you're a guy. And
yeah.
How is that? I mean, how do those relationships change, or...
Mm-hmm.
Or can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I've definitely... I haven't had any friends actually have a problem with me coming out and being like, oh, you're transgender, I don't want to have anything to do with you anymore. But I've had a couple friends just kind of slip away. You know, friends slip away over time, you know. I've had a couple people slip like that, but they're also, and I know that they're also not super completely 100% on board and supportive with, you know, the LGBTQ, QAI, all that
right.
fun stuff community. So I definitely have a couple friends who've kind of slipped away, but for the most part, though, my friends are freaking supportive as, you know, they could be. They're amazing. And, like, I have a lot of friends who, you know, knew me as a little girl and, you know, are still okay with who I am, and they're extremely supportive, and we still hang out. I know a lot of people from after I have come out and only have known me as Owen. And they know that I'm transgender and are completely supportive. Like, it's just, it's amazing. I feel really, really lucky. Like, I have some really, really good friends.
Well, Charlottesville seems like a good place to live if you're going to be going through something like this, too. I grew up in Bristol, Virginia, and it would have been a very different scene, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But Charlottesville's relatively open-minded. I'm sure you run into some folks who are not.
Yeah, yeah.
What about not even your peer group, but your parents' peer group? What about folks who, you know, teachers you had when you were a child, or the mailman, or somebody at the bank who you've known?
Yeah.
Do you ever get any kind of reaction from them when they see you and they recognize you and you've changed genders on them?
excuse me. Well,
or do they not recognize you?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple old neighbors back in Earliesville that I don't think recognize me. But I think it came out while I was still in Earliesville, but mm-hmm. I don't know if they really recognize me at all. I've definitely changed a lot since then.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any teachers growing up. I was homeschooled, so
right.
No teachers walking around.
I keep forgetting
around.
That.
Yeah. No teachers walking around being like, I kind of recognize you, but I don't know.
Do you have a sister?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, there'll be, like, the occasional person, like, you know, family, friends and stuff from way back that might not recognize me or will still call me something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's usually not a problem because they either don't know or they, you know, I just haven't seen them and they do know. And so it's kind of hard to, you know, male,
right,
Owen,
right,
Owen,
right.
Owen. You know, it's hard to do that if you don't see me very often.
I've heard sometimes the pronouns are hard for people. If you mm-hmm. grew up with somebody who was female and they're changed genders, it can be difficult to remember to mm-hmm. use the right pronoun.
That's what I've
been told anyway. My partner, my wife, works at Tandem Friend School,
mm-hmm.
and they've had a few people sort of transition this year in terms of, you know, deciding they wanted to use different pronouns and a different name. And, you know, it's my understanding that's one of the hard things for those kids is that their friends can't remember to call them the right name and the right pronoun.
Yeah. I haven't had, like, a super huge problem with that. Like I said, my friends are very, very supportive, and they're fantastic. But, you know, it's hard, even if you're the most supportive person, it's still going to be hard. It's, you know, you've known me for how long, and you got to switch over now, and, you know, it's hard because it's almost a muscle memory kind of thing.
Although I imagine it helps that you look like a guy now.
Yeah.
Right? You know? I mean, you got a beard. I mean, yeah. That's not a mistake I would make, so.
That's great, because I actually had someone the other day say, are you a girl or a guy? And I was like stroking my beard at him, like, what? I definitely had a couple friends back, especially when I first came out, and, you know, they actually, I think, they were very supportive. They started calling me Owen, you know, they had no problem with that, but the pronoun, oh my god, they got stuck on that so easily. It's really funny that the name can switch over so easily, but the pronouns, they can't.
Right.
And so, you know, for a good while, it was just like she, and I'm just like, oh my god, no, it's he. It got to the point where one of my friends was like, you know what, you can start punching me every time I say she, and eventually I'll get it.
Right, well, there you go. Do you ever get tired of educating people?
It depends on my mood. I definitely like educating people. I don't want there to be ignorant people around, especially to that kind of thing. And it's Charlottesville. It's like the liberal oasis in Virginia.
Right.
So I feel like everyone in Charlottesville should be, you know, at least some kind of educated about, you know, this kind of stuff. And, you know, there's, you know, most people will sit down and actually listen. If they're just completely ignorant and almost against it, like, I'll sit down with them and actually sit there for like half hour, an hour, explain to them, and then they completely change their mind. And they're just like, oh, wow, okay, I understand now, and I didn't even think of it like that. I'm so sorry.
Well,
you know,
sometimes you have to teach people. They don't know. I mean, you know, I'm old, and I don't know all this stuff. And so, you know, but if somebody will teach me, you know, I'm happy to hear about it. I'm happy to learn about it.
Yeah.
But I wonder if sometimes you get tired of teaching people about it. I just remember being gay and sort of, you know, even people who meant well, you know, couldn't always get things right. And, you know, sometimes people would ask me, sometimes you get tired of it. And I remember thinking, you know, no, I don't most of the time. But it was a question that people asked me all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess I'm just passing it off to you.
Actually, like, the only times I really get tired of it is if it's someone, one specific person who has asked me the same question repeatedly,
right,
or just cannot get a grip on it, and I've tried so many times, day after day, to try and explain it. But honestly, I don't get tired of it because I do like explaining it. Because, you know, it's helping people understand things. It's removing ignorance from the world, and I love that. And, you know, I'm a very open person about who I am in regards to the transgender and gay. You know, I'm not shy about that kind of stuff.
Well,
you're a brave
young man sitting here in the studio with us today and talking about something so personal. I really appreciate it. I think we're just about to wrap up here. So I'm going to say one more time, this is 94.7 WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. And this is Straight Talk with Andre Hakes. And I want to thank my guests, Owen Barra, and Linda McNeil, for being here today and teaching us all. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
This has been Straight Talk with your host, Andre Hakes, brought to you by Tucker Griffin Barnes. Production is from Olivia August. Engineering, Mike Friend. Be sure and listen again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for Straight Talk on 94.7, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville.